Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
The Supreme Court set aside 3 days to hear arguments on the Affordable Care Act. Today is the last day. Many of you, though, after 2 days of long arguments, still have questions about this law and how it might impact you. So we've got Todd Zwillick with us, our Washington correspondent. He's here to answer some of your questions. Are you ready, Todd?
I sure am, Celeste.
All right. One of the most common questions we've gotten is about the use of existing health insurance companies, to deliver this health care. Here's a really good example.
Hi, my name is Richard. I'm calling from Flagstaff, Arizona. And the fact that the government has not put in a nonprofit health care to compete with the for-profit insurance boggles my mind, because insurance companies are required to make money. And they make money at our expense by denying coverage, by telling doctors they can't use a certain procedure, and so on.
Okay, so Todd, what happened to the nonprofit or even the single-payer option?
Well, Congress tried this in several different iterations. There is a single-payer option, which was never really part of this debate. That means Medicare for everybody. The government is the insurer. Everybody buys insurance from the government. That was never really going to be part of this debate in the Affordable Care Act. In terms of other nonprofit options,
why was it never going to be part of the debate?
Because of politics. Because of politics. There just aren't the votes in Congress for single-payer health care. A lot of liberals want it, but a lot of moderates and no conservatives do. You hear that dismissed these days as Canadian-style healthcare or European-style healthcare or socialism, which also Obamacare gets branded as those things. But single-payer healthcare actually sort of is socialistic, and it is Canadian-style healthcare. So in that case, that the rap would be true. We don't have the politics for single-payer healthcare in this country. There was an attempt. You remember the debate over the public option.
Yeah.
The public option would have said, under the exchanges that we're going to have under the Affordable Care Act, if it stays in place, if the Supreme Court doesn't strike significant parts of the law down, one of the options under the healthcare exchanges, there would be private plans, but also a public plan funded by the federal government. That idea never got the votes and was shot down. After that, some moderate Democrats said, well, we could have privately run nonprofit co-ops, like some of the insurance in some of the Midwestern states, like the
Blue
Dakotas
Cross.
Have these
yeah.
things. That got shot down too, never quite got the votes. So, Richard, people tried to do this. There are members of Congress who agreed with you. They never quite got the votes. The answer is politics.
All right. So, Todd, the insurance companies actually were the subject of a lot of questions, also from our doctors who seem to have a lot of frustration with insurance companies. Here's Kristen C. She says, I'd like to know if government regulation would mean an improvement in private insurance companies' institutional practice of denying claims and losing claims that are legitimate. A friend who worked in the insurance industry said this is a common practice. The idea, obviously, is to wear down the claimant who doesn't have the time to devote multiple submissions and phone calls in order to receive the coverage they are entitled to. Will the Affordable Care Act change that, Todd?
It's supposed to. There are provisions in this bill that say insurance companies can only deny payouts now when there's clear evidence that you, the policyholder, maybe lied on your application, didn't talk about that pre-existing condition, or weren't truthful when you signed up for insurance, or that there are medical reasons, policy reasons for the denial. They have to show why they're denying claims. They can't just and by the way, losing the claim or just saying, well, we're not going to pay is not going to cut it under the Affordable Care Act.
Okay. Let's move on to this question from Steve in Salt Lake City. He's also talking about regulation here. If the goal of the law is to reduce the financial burden passed on to taxpayers by the cost of health care for the uninsured, assuming it actually exists, what's in place to ensure that the savings are passed on instead of going straight to the coffers of the insurance companies?
Well, that's a little bit complicated because that assumes that there will be savings, and nobody's
right.
really sure if there will be. There's no such thing as a free lunch. It does cost a lot of money to insure 40 million people, or in this case, 32 million people who didn't have insurance before. The question is, how do you finance it, and can you finance it fairly?
Aren't they supposed to put a large portion of it toward actual care instead of administrative costs, though?
Yes, and that's my next point. That's technically called the medical loss ratio, and the number is 80%. What that says under the Affordable Care Act is that insurance companies who are on the exchanges getting subsidies or otherwise interacting with people under the act have to spend 80% of the money they get from you on health care. That means they can't spend it on ads or billboards or marketing or administrative costs or CEO salaries. It has to be poured directly into health care. That number was going to be 90% when they were debating this bill, then it got knocked down to 85% and now it's 80%. But anyway, the number is 80%. They have to put it into your health care, which is supposed to help be a downward pressure on costs because it spreads the money that's actually going into medical care.
We're getting answers from our Washington correspondent, Todd Zwillick. If you still have questions, you can always call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or just post a comment at thetakeaway.org like Patrick did. He's concerned about his business. He says, I own a small restaurant. From my best understanding, that means I'll have to give health coverage to all of my employees averaging 35 hours a week. No way I could afford that. So what will be the outcome? No one gets to work 35 hours a week. Welcome to the world of unintended consequences.
That is one potential unintended consequence, but Patrick should know, and he should get in touch with his local small business association or look into the law, because there's a system of subsidies for businesses just like his of different sizes and different incomes that get taxpayer subsidies for this very thing. The government doesn't want you to have people only working 34 hours. They don't want you to fire people because you can't afford insurance, and they don't want you to go out of business, so they're going to give you money to insure these people. So look it up.
And that's the same is true for, say, an individual citizen who is low income, correct?
Absolutely. If the insurance mandate, if it stands, the individual mandate is going to cost you more than 8% of your income, that's a hardship exemption. You're totally exempt. If you qualify for Medicaid, this bill expands Medicaid, assuming the Medicaid expansion doesn't get struck down.
Right.
In today's arguments, there's a Medicaid expansion if you're poverty or near the poverty line, you and your family. If you're middle class or lower middle class, there's a big system of subsidies. A lot of people have been concerned that they have to buy insurance that they simply can't afford, that healthcare is expensive now,
right? And that
they're
go
just
up.
Gonna have, and that it'll go up. It's not supposed to, because if you're a person who's on the margin or has trouble paying, there are a lot of taxpayer subsidies or Medicaid involved in this bill. So you want to look carefully. If you're a family that makes $40,000, there's likely to be several thousand dollars available to you in taxpayer subsidies to pay for coverage if the individual mandate stands in June.
Todd, we can't get any of our lawyers to make predictions on how the Supreme Court will rule. Do you think I can get you to do it?
I think you probably can't, but I'm going to listen to those arguments again and get back to me.
Our Washington correspondent, Todd Zwillick, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
If you have lingering questions, you can still ask them. We will answer them for you. 877-8-MY-TAKE or post your comments to thetakeaway.org.